Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. If you Catholic girls start much too late. Oh, but sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well will be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Oh, but they never told you the price that you pay. Hi everyone, this is Dr. Michael Walden. Thank you so much for joining me this weekend on what I hope will be a very practical and useful and definitely not boring discussion on genetically modified foods. Some of you know that I published a book called Frankenfoods, Controversies, Lies, and Your Health. And it basically is a Q&A or question and answer formatted book so that a person could easily look up their specific concerns and go right to that area of the book to find out their answers. The book is 144 pages. It's very concise. It's very much to the point. And it covers all the points. And we have the opportunity today to actually speak about a good amount of the major points that I present throughout my book, Frankenfoods. Now, for those of you, again, who are new to the show, I am Dr. Michael Wall, the Blood Detective, and you are listening to Ask the Blood Detective. This is a show where you get to tell me what it is you want to hear. You can email me, as many of you have, at info@integratednutritionny.com or info@blooddetective.com. And my website is www.integratednutritionny.com. So send those questions, post them on the blog. Many of the prior radio shows, actually I believe all of them, are posted on the blog, but they're also found in PRN's archives. And for those of you who've asked me through the email how to arrange an appointment with me to actually work with me on one-on-one, you can do that by calling my office directly at 914-242-8844. So this show is my very first radio show attempt to provide you with an organized way of thinking about GMOs. And I'll be including many of the questions that the public, which is you, of course, my patient populations, and I also share regarding the potential health risks, the environmental impacts and political implications of introducing genetically modified organisms or foods into our environment and, of course, into our bodies. And as a natural healthcare provider for about 26 years, I have treated patients, I've educated the public, I've attended scientific symposia, and I've researched hundreds of topics that involve staying healthy, focusing also on delaying the onset of disease, improving the quality of our lives. But I predict that this GMO controversy, as I'll politely call it right now, will continue to plague us for many years to come. So we better arm ourselves with information about their dangers and what we can do to avoid some of the inevitable contact we will have with GMOs hidden in our foods. Now, from a human health perspective, I personally fear that the quality and length of life of people who consume toxic GMOs will be affected. And there's some evidence base for these concerns. My research has convinced me that some people will endure very vague or fleeting symptoms with no obvious cause, and ultimately over years and decades, and fleeting symptoms with no obvious cause, and ultimately over years and even decades suffer from more severe issues. It could be cancer, they might be intestinal problems, they might manifest as fertility issues or just fatigue, certainly memory problems, and any other health disturbances that I believe could potentially be caused by consuming GMOs over a period of time. Now, what I find particularly sad is that traditional doctors in general, first of all, they don't give much thought to the GMO controversy, but some that I'm aware of, and also scientific researchers, will attempt to treat whatever symptoms that people, you know, have with yet other toxic compounds or pharmaceuticals or potentially toxic compounds. And let's hope that some of those don't contain GMOs themselves, and that this is just continuing this perpetual cycle of symptom suppression and disease in exchange for medication and other side effects, even though natural solutions are available. Now, as a population, I think we are being force-fed foods that have been manipulated unnaturally in the laboratory and are presumed to be safe for health consumption with no good safety scientific evidence for the either short or long-term safety of GMOs. Now, genetic modification of our food supply also has the potential to cause devastating health risks in anyone of any age. Now, some of the ways in which GMOs may cause illness and chronic disease include the following. You might want to write this down, or you might want to listen, you know, to the show a couple of times because it's a bit detailed. I understand that, but it's important. So, ingestion of foods that our bodies have not adapted to, meaning GMO foods, because of their recent introduction into the food chain. Just no time for us to evolutionarily learn to manage these GMO foods. There may be indirect health risks and serious environmental impacts, such as cross-contamination between GMOs and unintended plants and animals in the surrounding and distant environment. And this has already occurred. There's evidence for this. I am concerned about increased cancer incidence and various autoimmune disease, also conditions such as Alzheimer's, and again, specific autoimmune conditions like MS and lupus, also the inflammatory bowel diseases such as Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and proctitis, hormonal problems stemming from the effects that GMOs may have on our DNA and the immune system. And I want to remind the listeners today that many of these concepts, I fully admit, have not been fully substantiated, but there is some evidence base for very, very careful pause and consideration of them. Here's something interesting. The nutritional content of GMO foods is dozens to thousands of times lower than those foods grown on farms that are not tainted with GMOs. What is also interesting is that the nutritional content of farm-grown crops in general, as opposed to the wild-type variety of foods, you know, those foods not grown on a farm, those wild-type foods have dozens to hundreds of times higher levels of nutrition. So, just wild-type foods to farming, huge drop from the wild to the farm in nutritional content. And then we add on top of that genetically modified foods, and that makes the problem even worse, compounding it further. And I really feel I need to restate that the dangers to our health from GMO consumption simply cannot be ruled out at this time. And in fact, there is reasonable scientific evidence and real-life experiences suggesting, you know, of people, of individuals who've consumed GMOs, that suggest that right now GMOs can and do pose potentially very serious health risks. Some of those health issues will be obvious, but most will be hidden from view in the short term, only to manifest as perhaps familiar symptoms and diseases later on. I think that most will likely go unrecognized by conventional physicians and also the scientific community, and this certainly is where we get into trouble. Now, my book, Frankenfoods, Controversies, Lies, and Health Risks, is not the most complete text on the topic, but it is, I believe, the most concise. So you should check out what I'm saying today here against more details, if you wish, in my book. But what really is the GMO controversy? In part, the controversy is essentially this. Various governments, government organizations such as the FDA or the Food and Drug Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency or the EPA, GMO scientists, manufacturers of GMO seeds, such as Monsanto, ignored and deny the potential dangers to the world environment and human health, I believe, again, solely for profit. I believe we've all been victims of deceit and misrepresentations regarding the safety and environmental impacts of GMOs, and throughout my book and throughout this conversation today, I'll provide many examples of how this has occurred. I'm convinced that cover-ups abound and continue to poison us from many influences, including the industrial complex, the scientific circles, and within the political arena in general. Now, has appropriate scientific study proved beyond reasonable doubt that GMOs are safe for human consumption and for the environment? I say no. We need rigorous and unbiased scientific study because it's lacking. And the limited study to date supports the concepts that GMOs should not have been introduced into our food supply so early. And to paraphrase a geneticist on this topic, a one who doubts the uncertainties of the impact of GMOs upon human health and the environment, let me actually restate what I was just about to say. I want to paraphrase a geneticist who recognizes the issues with GMO, and this geneticist said that anyone who denies the uncertainty of the effects of GMOs upon human health is either ignorant or just plain stupid. I couldn't have said it any better myself. So, do GMOs pose any strong health risks that overwhelm the potential benefits that GMOs might provide? Well, has it been further established that GMOs are safe in the short and the long term for human consumption? Have political and financial motivations corrupted and blinded organizations such as the FDA? I think the answer is yes, yes, and yes. We are in big trouble. Someone just sent me a message asking, what's a Frankenfood? I guess I should probably give you a bit of a history on how I came up with that term for the book. So remember the book Frankenstein, written by Mary Shelley about a budding young scientist named Frankenstein? Well, Dr. Frankenstein wished to create the perfect, most exquisite human being that had ever existed. Instead, as we all know, young Frankenstein created a ghastly, awful, abhorrent monster. Dr. Frankenstein never imagined that his attempts at improving the human being would result in a literal catastrophe of science and philosophy. Frankenstein mixed his chemicals with various cadaver parts exactly as they should. He did everything right. He was certain he had anticipated every conceivable mishap, but nonetheless, he created something completely unlike what he desired. He produced an abomination, much like the results, I feel, of the efforts of GMO manufacturers and geneticists. So you can see the parallel. So Frankenfood is a term I chose to describe GMOs that emphasize the Frankensteinian-like effects that I believe GMOs are inflicting or can inflict upon our health, our society, and our planet. You know, and to give the GMO industry the benefit of the doubt, Dr. Frankenstein, you know, just like him, well, the fictional Dr. Frankenstein, that is, Dr. Frankenstein had a misguided but noble purpose. You know, he was convinced that he could create a more perfect human being. The GMO industry may or may not have some noble purpose behind their efforts to control the source of all food on the planet, meaning seeds. It seems, however, based on readily available studies and industry papers about the GMO controversy, that the GMO experiment is currently a disastrous failure. And like Frankenstein's monster was to Dr. Frankenstein, GMOs may very well be the death of us. And after a statement like that, it's time for a disclaimer, okay? I have to play by the rules in some respects, saying that this information, of course, is for educational purposes only. And for any particular health advice you have, I wouldn't imagine that it may be related to GMOs, although we don't know if it's not. But you'd have to, of course, seek the advice of your doctor for that. So back to GMOs. Genetically modified foods include, as many of you listeners know, corn and soy products and cottonseed and canola oil and papaya and alfalfa, sugar beets, aspartame, and milk. So this list obviously is already growing, and it's destined to continue to grow unless properly regulated. Now, the GMOs are foods produced from the seeds that have been artificially modified by geneticists in the laboratory, for those who do not know. A further detail that you might not know is that a gene gun is used, or other similar techniques, to blast desired genes, which carry the potential for certain genetic traits, into the genes of the seeds, such as corn or soy. And the goal of the GMO geneticist is to manipulate normal or non-GMO seeds to produce superior foods. Now, admittedly, attempting concept, I admit, but as nature and science would have it, there is a deceitful side to the creation of these superior foods, and you can read more about that beyond what we'll talk about today in my book, Frankenfoods. And GMO scientists are claiming that genetic modification of foods will increase food crop yields, and you know, thus will have a reduction in world hunger and food costs and improve the nutritional quality of our current food supply. They make other questionable and unsubstantiated claims as well, and sadly, Current research, albeit limited and inconclusive, I understand for the most part, still does suggest that GMOs have inferior nutritional quality, not superior, and GMO crops' yields are not greater, and world hunger will not be reduced by GMO technology. You know, we produce approximately or an average of about 4.5 pounds of food per person per day on the planet. So the real problem is getting the food to the mouths of the people in need, not needing more food. I feel that Frankenfoods represent what can happen when, and actually what's already happening, when mankind attempts to reinvent the blade of grass. Nature, in all its brilliance, offers wondrous beauties that we take for granted, from the skies and the oceans, rivers, lakes, to the animals and plants, including the grains, fruits, and vegetables that help sustain us. Now, contrary to GMO geneticists' claims, GMOs are not naturally produced, and as pro-GMO scientists would have us believe, I actually heard on one of the major networks this statement where a GMO scientist was claiming, well, genetic modification occurs naturally. Of course it does, but this isn't that. A gene gun is not natural. They don't exist in nature. So that is not comparing a natural apple to a natural apple. Let's talk for a minute or so about the term adaptation. Now, adaptation is a term used by biologists to describe the process whereby living organisms like you and me and our ancestors cope and coped with changes in the external environments and our internal physiologies. For example, if our human ancestors lived in a cold environment, those early hominids having genetically superior cold weather tolerance would live and they would procreate and pass on their traits, while those lacking the trait to deal with a very cold environment would die off, obviously, and they would not pass on their inferior genetic trait. Now, anthropologists and scientists who study evolution believe that human beings, as well as other animals and plants, have evolved in this similar manner of continuous adaptation to their environment since the first documented genetic humans. That's Homo habilis, which evolved around 2.3 million years ago. So the fundamental process of genetic evolution with GMOs has been reinvented. That's what modern geneticists have done. But when you apply this concept to Frankenfoods, well, I think we can all agree we may have some disastrous results on our hands. Now, domestication of plants has been occurring for about 10,000 years, and this has resulted in certain, you know, homeostatic and natural perfection. Nature's designed the evolutionary process to allow for natural development of organisms that match and keep pace with spontaneous and gradual, gradual genetic alterations in their genes, as well as environmental influences. With GMO gene gun type of technologies, there's no gradual manipulation. There are forced genetic manipulations, and it is shocking to me that the pro-GMO geneticists are claiming that the same type of natural evolution that happens in nature is what they're reproducing in the lab, and that is insulting. It's simply not true. Let me say that another way. It is simply impossible for the type of gene manipulation induced by geneticists in a laboratory to match nature's perfection. I'm not claiming that there's no benefit in society for genetic manipulation of foods, perhaps one day. But what I am saying is that GMOs should be considered unsafe until they are proven otherwise. So let me share with you some of the questions that fellow listeners are concerned about regarding GMOs. So one of the questions I received, which is a very fundamentally important one, is what are genetically modified organisms? So the term genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, refers to an organism whose genetic material has been modified due to genetic engineering techniques. So genetic modification technologies are used to alter the makeup of organisms. And these organisms could be animals, they could be plants, they could be bacteria, for example. GMOs
are the source of many modified foods that are used widely, not only in society now, but also continue to be studied in scientific research to produce various goods. For example, in 2006, 8 countries grew 97% of the global crops with artificially modified genes. The United States, 53% then, Argentina, 17%, Brazil, 11%, Canada, 6%, India, 4%, China, 3%, Paraguay, 2%, and South Africa, 1%. And within the next decade, it's expected that we'll see a dramatic increase in the use of GMOs and GM technologies in all industrialized nations. Another interesting thing is that, I mean, when I first found out about GMOs, I was asked to write an article on GMO for a national magazine, and they asked me to comment on corn as a pesticide factory. And this was several years back, and I had no awareness of this. So I did my research, and that's what started me along the path of researching GMOs and then eventually writing the book Frankenfoods. So having said that, genetically modified organisms such as corn do produce their own pesticides. So corn is actually a pesticide factory. Each ear of corn is literally a drug manufacturing plant. Now, proponents of GMOs frequently claim that the current methods used to genetically modified foods, as I've been saying the last several minutes, are identical to or even, they say, substantially different. What I meant to say, I'm sorry, is that they're saying that the GMOs are not substantially different from foods that are naturally occurring in the environment. But then again, at other times, they say that the GMOs have a greater nutritional content. Well, even if it were true, and it's not, that GMOs contain the equivalent amount of nutrition as their non-GMO counterparts, I would venture to say that you'll never find corn naturally farmed or grown in the wild that has the ability to produce its own pesticide all by itself. So let me back up for a minute. Let's go back to this gene gun concept. So one of the most common methods used to insert genes into a target material, or, you know, DNA into corn or soy, for example, is what's known as the biallelic effect. So this method involves using a gene gun to literally shoot into the target's DNA a gene or two that carries whatever trait they want to have the organism produce. However, many unexpected results can occur from this method, disrupting the entire genetic sequence of the target tissue, can upregulate certain genes, downregulate other genes. They can cause certain genes to be silent and cause unpredictable or undesirable effects of these genes. That's what's referred to as default effects. So we know it happens. Geneticists know it happens. And a type of these default effects are known as transgenic gene manipulation. And one possible effect of transgenic gene manipulation, according to some that are concerned about the dangers of GMO, is cancer. So cancer, in part, results in the inappropriate upregulation of certain genes, and those genes are known as oncogenes, or cancer-causing genes. So the changes in the genetic sequence of the target, like a seed, may theoretically result in changes that might produce allergies due to alteration of the proteins in that gene. I think you get the point. So those of us concerned with transgenic modification of foods recognize on some level that new toxins could be produced by these foods, making them unhealthy or outright toxic. And other concerns I've researched and that you've probably heard about in the media include the potential for nutritional deficiencies, adverse nutritional changes, even antibiotic resistance can occur by eating certain GMO foods, theoretically at least. So who started all this nonsense? Well, that goes to another question that was proposed to me through email, which is namely, who is Monsanto and when did they start producing genetically modified foods? So the Monsanto company is an American multinational agricultural biotechnology corporation. They're headquartered in Missouri, and they are a leading producer of the genetically modified seed or seeds. They were founded in 1901. And they originally operated primarily as a producer of plastics, including polystyrene and synthetic fibers. So as a chemical company, certain notable achievements by Monsanto and its scientists included the first company to mass produce LEDs and performing breakthrough research on something called catalytic asymmetric hydrogenation. Now, products manufactured by Monsanto, which were and are deemed controversial, include, as we all know, DDT and PCBs, but even Agent Orange. Monsanto is not known also for its honesty or transparency regarding the dangers of DDT, PCPs, and Agent Orange. So why should we believe that they're being forthright about the potential dangers of GMOs? That would be inconsistent logic at the very least. And it was in 1983 that Monsanto and three academic teams were the first to genetically modify a plant cell and conduct field trials of genetically modified crops. The first genetically modified food was the tomato. Between 1977 and I believe it was 2002, the company came to focus heavily on biotechnology after a process of mergers and spin-offs. So Monsanto pioneered the biotechnology industry by applying its business model to agriculture. So here's another good question asked, which is really fundamental for this whole conversation of GMOs, is what are the concerns about Monsanto and their claims regarding GMO safety specifically? Well, the concern that I and a large percentage, I believe, of the scientific and healthcare and environmental groups and the public have is that it may take decades to fully appreciate the negative impact of genetically modified food consumption upon the public. I've heard pro-GMO geneticists claim that there's no evidence that GMOs possess a health threat because people eating GMOs, they've been eating GMOs since the 1990s, and if real dangers exist, they say, the pro-GMO people, people would be dropping like flies. Well, I believe that this statement is a misrepresentation, or at least it's not based upon careful scientific scrutiny. Since the introduction of GMOs, people are experiencing an increased risk of various diseases. We're talking about cancer, gastrointestinal problems, autoimmune diseases, just to name a few. So people are dropping like flies. Now, it's true that I certainly cannot definitively connect the increased incidence of various diseases that we're seeing to timing that with the introduction of GMOs into the food chain, the great big experiment, I guess, but one could not rule that out. It is just as reasonable to consider it than to ignore that possibility. I mean, who is to say that GMO consumption is not to blame or is not at least a contributor to the deterioration of our health and environment that we're all witnessing? So I don't think one cannot rule out these possibilities at this point. In the meantime, I would urge people to avoid GMOs until further scientific studies have examined the impact upon human health and the environment. So what a lot of the pro-GMO scientists are saying, meaning that GMOs cannot possibly cause these issues, I would have to paraphrase my good friend Mr. Spock from Star Trek. It was a great line from one of the movies, and he said, I never forget, he said, when you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. So it seems to me that GMOs are a very strong candidate for contributing to a variety of health issues that we have seen in our society, which have been roughly timed with the introduction of GMOs into the food chain. You know, another, I think, major misrepresentation by Monsanto company was that their claim that the safety and benefits of the ingredients in GMOs were well established. In fact, that's not so. There have been, to my knowledge, no long-term studies about either the safety or the benefits of GMO and their ingredients. The FDA, very oddly, does not require safety studies of GMOs. This is a curious stance, I believe, because This either represents ignorance or outright delusional thinking on the part of the decision makers at the FDA. In fact, the FDA leaves the job of carrying out safety studies to Monsanto and other manufacturers of GMO products themselves. Now, if that doesn't result in inherently biased research, which can ultimately result in the largest uncontrolled study ever, meaning untested exposure of consumers to GM foods, and I don't know what is. And a number of independent studies have already raised serious questions as to, for example, allergies or nutritional inadequacies from GMO foods and the risks to our immune systems, our renal system, cardiovascular, hepatic, which is liver, even the gastrointestinal symptom. So the conflict of interest here should be obvious. And to quote George Orwell on this point, he said, quote, "The very concept of objective truth is fading out of the world. Lies will pass into history." So these and other potential health problems, which will occur in individuals and will not be obvious to physicians or the scientific community, could result, I say, from the consumption of GMO products. It should also be remembered that physicians uninterested in GMO's potential health risks wouldn't likely contribute lots of health problems that they see to GMOs. You know, a person comes into a doctor's office with gastrointestinal, immune, cardiovascular, renal, hepatic, all kinds of issues. And if these doctors do not have a high index of suspicion about GMOs being part of the cause in exposure, then it won't be. It's not like there's a governmental database at the Center of Disease Control that says, if you suspect GMOs are part of your patient's symptoms, please report it to us. But they do have these sort of reporting systems for certain lab abnormalities and drug toxicities and side effects with people. So why not this consideration? I'm doing a lot of paraphrasing this morning, but one of my best, or favorite quotes from Einstein went something like this. He said, "If you want new answers, you must ask a whole new set of questions." And I know some of you are familiar with this famous quote. So if we want to know the potential effects of GMOs upon the human body, we have to first entertain the question, are there any adverse effects of GMOs on the body? Then set out to prove or disprove it. But I don't think we can look at medicine in its current state to help us. You know, generally speaking, many mainstream physicians they're well-intentioned, they're intelligent individuals, but many, not all, blindly trust the FDA. They don't question its contentions or the safety issues surrounding GMOs, not to mention many other concepts. So unless people in a very, very short period of time develop, acute symptoms, immediate symptoms is what acute means from GMOs, what happened with tryptophan, physicians probably would not recognize the connection between GMOs and their detrimental effects upon health. Now, this whole GMO question regarding tryptophan, which occurred many, many years ago, I'll never forget this because I was a young kid who I would hang around my dad quite often in his chiropractic nutrition office in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and he would dispense certain nutrients. One of them was tryptophan. And I remember a relative of ours was taking tryptophan that my father had given her, and she got deathly ill. And to make a long story a little bit shorter, she developed eosinophilia myalgia syndrome, which you all probably have heard was attributed to being caused by tryptophan. But the problem was, way back then, in the 80s, the Japanese manufacturer of tryptophan, who supplied most of the tryptophan, if not all of the tryptophan, don't quote me on that one though, I don't know how much they supply, but it was the majority, which got private labeled under different labels. So in other words, when this problem happened of eosinophilia myalgia syndrome, EMS, and it was connected to tryptophan, it was erroneously concluded by the FDA that tryptophan was the toxin. That was the problem. And thus, maybe all nutritional supplements are the problem too. And hence, we have the difficulties we have now with the government pushing nutritional companies out of business, or at least attempting to, and to take our rights as consumers away to purchase nutritional products. But this issue with tryptophan is they finally found out that it was not the tryptophan at all, but it was a genetically modified GMO project by the Japanese that they did not divulge. They on their own did experimentation. They contaminated the tryptophan, which then got redistributed under different labels, and thus, understandably, the tryptophan was blamed. But even when it was eventually found out that it was not the tryptophan, it took way over a decade for tryptophan to be available. And that's when nutritional companies started to develop other analogs of tryptophan, like 5-hydroxytryptophan, which they could sell. So, very, very interesting history of GMOs. So, what I'm trying to say here is that it's much more difficult to study and recognize and attribute the effects of foods on human health over many, 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 many different years. You would think, if there was a toxic immediate effect of something like tryptophan and all these people got sick right away, see, that's easy to see. That's very, very easy to see. And because of that, tryptophan was pulled off the market, and understandably so. But once again, once they determined it was not the actual tryptophan, but the genetically modified process of bacterial contamination, it was not reintroduced for over 10 years later. So when the claim is made by pro-GMO scientists that if it were GMOs causing all these different increases in disease and symptomatology that we're seeing in the United States and elsewhere probably, then people would be dropping like flies. But again, if it's chronic and insidious, we do know that people are dropping like flies, but it would be extremely difficult. The scientific method is simply not structured to deal well with these sorts of determinations. This is when we need to use our common sense, but in the GMO world, particularly the pro-GMO world, common sense is not so common. So we need some new and modified and some original methods of study so that we can determine the long-term potential health problems associated with GMOs. But until that happens, avoiding them is probably a very, very good idea. I'm working on a book right now of GMO-free recipes that I'll be publishing, and another book that combines GMO-free recipes with gluten-free. I mean, you see how serious this dilemma is getting, folks, because we're eliminating so much of the food chain. I mean, what are we going to end up eating? But the point is, there are some steps we can take. And that book and those recipes, many samples, will be posted on my blog after the airing of this show. I suggest that you check them out. All of them have been tried and cooked, and they are delicious. So let's move to another question that I received through email. And that question is, what is the impact of GMO technology on our food supply? What are the concerns held by opponents of GMOs? So we've answered some of this, so let's reiterate and add a few more details. Well, okay, a little bit of history. The impact of GMO technology on the food supply can be seen by the huge amount of commercialized GM foods that are being sold around the country and the world. First introduced in the food supply in the 1990s, GMOs are present in the majority of processed foods in the U.S. GMOs are banned as food ingredients in Europe and many other countries. I guess they've got more common sense than we do. But in the U.S., the FDA does not even require labeling of GMOs in food ingredients lists on a consistent basis. Now, currently, commercialized GM crops in the U.S. include, sugar beets, about 95%, soy, 94%, cotton, around 90%, corn, around 88%, zucchini and yellow squash, somewhere about 80%, Hawaiian papaya, over 50%. So let's get back now to the question, the technology impacts. Though there have been attempts to increase the nutritional benefits or productivity of food, two main characteristics added to GMOs are tolerance to herbicides and ability of a plant to make its own pesticides. These changes have conferred no nutritional benefits on humans, only economic benefits for the seed manufacturers. That's what I think. Studies have shown an increased use of pesticide sprays in spite of this, not less spraying as anticipated or claimed by pro-GMO scientists and by the GMO industry overall. It's claimed that through GM technology, food can be modified to reproduce more quickly and with more desired traits. And they claim that farmers would produce higher crop yields, but sadly, this has not been demonstrated. So let's now focus on a very fundamentally important question. Is there any evidence that the consumption of GMOs by humans is unhealthy? So there's much debate over the extent to which GMOs are healthy or unhealthy to consume. All GMOs currently sold in the U.S. have been approved by the government as healthy and safe for human consumption. But that does not mean that they are healthy or safe for human consumption. Remember GMO safety, quote-unquote safety studies, and determinations are carried out by Monsanto and the seed manufacturers themselves. That's an inherently biased and self-serving strategy. It makes no sense. So what about these claims of new allergens possibly produced by GMOs, increased toxicity, decreased nutrition, antibiotic resistance? These are very interesting things. So there are several types, the way I see it, of potential negative health effects of GMOs that could result from eating them. And I outline these in great detail in Frankenfoods, Controversy, Lies, and Your Health. And you can get that, by the way, on Amazon or from my website if you want further details. And as I mentioned, the health effects of primary concern, the way I see them, at least the major ones, are production of new allergies when you eat these GMO-modified foods, increased toxicity, decreased nutrition, and very, very scary antibiotic resistance, just to name a few. So if the protein in a GMO comes from a source known to cause allergens or from a source that's not genetically consumed as human food, there is a concern that an allergic reaction could be elicited from that protein that's been blasted into that genetically modified foods. So most plants produce substances that are toxic to humans naturally. But it's suspected that GMO processing increases the toxicity potential. So in a study on humans, one of the subjects in the experimental group showed an immune response to genetically modified soy, but not to non-genetically modified soy. The GM soy, the genetically modified soy, contained a protein that was different from the non-GM soy. And this finding showed that GMOs such as GM soy are capable of producing new allergens and can provoke immune responses. And you know, I almost forgot to mention, but there's a concern regarding fetal exposure to toxic GMO products. So there is a legitimate concern that if a foreign, or what we determined earlier is called a transgenic gene, is inserted into a plant, toxins would be produced at higher levels, making the genetically modified plant dangerous for human consumption. So this effect has been observed through conventional breeding methods of plants. There's a study that was conducted in Canada that detected high levels of that protein, CRY1AB, which is found in GM BT crops, circulating in the blood of pregnant women and their fetuses, also in the blood of non-pregnant women. So it's unclear how the BT toxin protein got into the bloodstream. However, the study questions why GM BT crops are being sold widely when research indicates these very potentially serious concerns about the health and safety of GM products to both mother and fetus. I think the bottom line here is that pregnant women, certainly, and their developing babies can suffer ill health effects from GMO products, including possibly birth defects, impaired immune systems, neurologic, metabolic disorders, you name it. Why not? Unbelievably, the diet of a pregnant woman that includes GMOs may also affect the genetic material of the developing fetus. That's called modifying what's called as gene expression. And that, very scary thought, that could potentially affect future generations by altering the DNA in the fetus that becomes an adult, that procreates, that passes on these altered genes, that can result in problems for generations that we have no clue about. Now, that may sound far-fetched to some of us that are not geneticists, except this is a genetic fact. This is known to happen. For example, zinc deficiencies cause genetic modifications that are known to be passed on for multiple generations. And even if the next generation consumes adequate zinc, they can't fix the problem. You may want to re-listen to that part of this radio show at some point. We've all been focusing on how do we manage our health now, and we take our nutrition and we eat our healthy diets, and we probably have not put any thought at all to this crazy concept, which is actually scientific fact, that nutritional issues or anything at all that adversely modifies our genes now. Look, toxins in the environment, whether they're heavy metals or infectious agents or just radiation exposure, you name it. Nutritional deficiencies are known to modify our genes. Those are called epigenetic effects. And those quirks in our genes can occur in our sexual cells. The eggs, obviously, in women, and the sperm in men. And then they meet and they combine and they pass on these genetic glitches that have occurred from prior generations. So it's becoming quite a serious problem, which, and this might account in part, I theorize, for why some of my patients will say to me, Dr. Wald, I've taken everything right. Why do I still have my health problem? Well, there's lots of reasons why a person might not get better, even though they do everything 100% correctly, even if that were possible, by the way. And one could be that it's not your fault. You are victimized by genetic quirks resulting from prior generations of gene defects. And now, with the introduction of GMOs, the potential for added gene stress and effects being passed on to future generations is a very, very real danger. Let's speak a little bit about the nutritional content of GMOs, because I received a question, well, quite a lot of questions on this. So in my book, Frankenfoods, I plainly say that Frankenfoods are not nutritionally equivalent. That is the term used by geneticists to their non-GMO counterparts. To make matters worse, our fruit, vegetable, and grain crops have undergone unprecedented drops in nutritional content over the last few decades. This is documented. Now, a study that came out just a couple of years ago comparing dozens of what are known as wild-type variety plants. Those are plants that are grown outside of farms. In other words, in the wild, to the same species of plants grown on industrial farms, proved that the nutritional content of the wild variety plants were dozens to thousands of times higher. It's also been known for years that organic plants have superior nutrition content compared with non-organic food plants. So we know there's a difference. The manufacturing process, the processing of foods, whether foods are organic or not, whether foods are GMO or not, whether they're wild type or not, these things matter. So not surprisingly, significant nutritional losses have been shown in GM plants. GMO nutritional studies are scant at best, I admit it, but assays that have been done show real diminished nutritional content, not superior nutritional content, and certainly not nutritional equivalency. Pro-GMO advocates, I just hear this all the time, repeatedly say that GMOs do not differ substantially from their non-GMO counterparts in nutritional equality. This claim has no basis because comparisons of nutritional content have been performed.
and they cast not just a little bit of doubt upon the nutritional quality of the GMOs. So individuals who are truly concerned with public safety would never release foods into the public that are considered or proven to be nutritionally inadequate compared to foods already on the market. Why would you want to replace those foods? Money. GMOs have not been studied adequately for nutritional content. More studies need to be done, but enough have been done to suggest a problem. My book further goes into how GMOs may affect the phytate content and the phytoestrogen content of the GMO food, so I'll leave it up to you to read more on that. I'd like to focus a little bit about antibiotic resistance, because we all know that this is a horrific and very serious problem in the United States due to the over-prescribing of antibiotics, whether these antibiotics were correctly prescribed or overly prescribed, they are inherently an issue. Doctors, for far too long, although I admit are well-intentioned because ignorance is bliss, if you don't know, something's bad. But, you know, that's one thing to say when you didn't know antibiotics could cause a problem to continue to prescribe them. But it's another thing when you know better. And the medical profession knows better. Not very long ago, I'm guessing around 6 months, Discovery magazine, available on all the newsstands, had a wonderful write-up on antibiotic resistance. And I had read information in that article that I have never seen in the lay public literature before. One of the things that the Discovery article discussed, and they had beautiful illustrations, it was a several-page write-up, went so far to point out to that if there are animals that eat antibiotics, they will develop antibiotic resistance, and then the human beings that eat the animal products could have that antibiotic resistance passed on to them. Now, this concept is entirely scientifically proven, and it's scientifically not only reasonable, it is known to happen. It is no longer something that holistic practitioners we've been saying this for years. It is no longer an issue. And whenever I see something like this in a mainstream periodical, I'm always struck. You think that that would make the news and there would be a discussion about antibiotic resistance. So those of us, like myself, who have made attempts to avoid antibiotics whenever possible, cannot fully avoid antibiotics if you ever eat meat. Someone's genetics, antibiotic resistance could develop in that individual. And when that person sneezes and bacteria come out of their bodies in the aerosol route through the air with that genetically modified bacteria, that then another person who, let's say, never had an antibiotic in their life, breathes that in, they can have their genes adversely modified by simply breathing in genetically modified organisms such as bacteria. Unbelievable, crazy science, but it is true. Or at least that point is true in the sense of a possibility. Although, again, to my knowledge, that last point has not been scientifically validated. But active study has been going on for years, and that's called translocation, the concept of altering genes in this way. Now, there is good news. My book, Frankenfoods, is the only book on GMOs that I am aware of that discusses ways to use nutritional supplements and diet to offset potentially some of the adverse effects of GMOs. Number one is to avoid them, obviously, if you can. But I have a sneaking suspicion that they will creep into our food supply, particularly foods that are not considered GMO foods. So I talk about the use of probiotics and certain enzymes and other techniques in the nutritional chapter in my Frankenfoods book. Let me end today by suggesting a few practical nutrients. Now, I should make clear that none of these nutrients or nutritional products that I'll be talking about right now have been studied to definitively help protect against GMOs. These are concepts that I have personally come up with that I think are reasonable. So, for example, healthy bugs like probiotics, which we all know are healthy forms of bacteria, or yeast, there's probiotic yeast that live in our digestive tract. Probiotics have long been known to help our general digestion, enhance absorption of nutrients, support endogenous production or production in the body of B vitamins. They lower cholesterol. They regulate immune function. They help control excessive inflammation. So I've combined a variety of probiotics in a product that I call Superbugs Colonize SI. And the dose I generally recommend is somewhere between 1 and 2 Superbug capsules per day. Now, not all probiotics are the same. Not all supplements are the same. Just like not all foods we clearly know now are the same. They're not necessarily apples and apples. So I've designed my Blood Detective line of supplements in the areas where I felt I can produce a supplement better and or cheaper, I did that. And in the probiotic area, I think I've done a nice job. Also, my milk thistle. Milk thistle is known as Silymarin, and Silymarin contains a group of compounds derived from milk thistle, which I won't get into their fancy names right now, but they've been demonstrated to have anti-cancer effects against a large variety of cancers, human prostate cancer and estrogen-dependent cancers such as breast cancer and endocervical cancer and colon cancer and lung cancer. So very, very important for removing of toxins. I would suggest between 300 and 600 milligrams per day, either with or without food. And then N-acetylcysteine. That's N-acetylcysteine or NAC, one of the most important nutritional compounds that a person can add to their diet to maximize, I believe, resistance to GMOs that might inevitably sneak into the diet. NAC has some of the most potent antioxidant effects of all nutrients. All of the reported harmful effects of GMOs, including nutritional, allergic, hormonal, toxic effects, could potentially be offset by NAC, somewhere between 500 and 1,000 milligrams. And I make that product as well. And in terms of antioxidant effects, which are absolutely important because antioxidants are fundamental for cellular repair and DNA repair, I use my detox food concentrates or my superfood concentrates known as Detox 1, Detox 2, 3, and 4. I usually recommend a half of a tiny scoop of all four of these mixed together in water to taste. It does not appreciably affect blood sugar. It's delicious. The products contain over 100 easily different plant foods with tens of thousands of protective phytonutrients, many of which have been studied for their beneficial effects upon our genome, our genetics, and reducing chronic degenerative risk. So thank you so much for joining me on this discussion of Frankenfoods. Now, the next show will be everything you needed to know about Lyme disease and co-infections and other infections. The controversy in this area extends so far beyond what you think you might know. You'll want to listen to this show. If there's anyone that you know that even suspects they have a chronic infection of any type and have been told by their doctors that there's nothing wrong and the tests are negative, or you've been treated enough, it's in your head, you've got to let them know about this show. I call it Lyme Disease Lies. And as always, let me know your questions about this topic so I can address them during the next show. Send me your questions to the following email, info@integratednutritionny.com or info@blooddetective.com. My website is www.integratednutritionny.com. And for those of you who would like to see me to work on your personal health, you can call my office at Integrated Nutrition of Mount Kisco. That's about an hour out of New York City at 914-242-8844. This is Dr. Michael Wald, the Blood Detective. You've been listening to Ask the Blood Detective. And remember, all of this information is for your education, is for your well-being, for you to think about it, research it, and choose what you feel is appropriate to make doable, subtle, but important changes in your life and your health that will add up over time. Healing takes time. It starts with information, and that information needs then to be translated into action. And sometimes we need support. Thank you very much. See you next time. Show you a statue told